This is a free Off The Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
McCoy Gig Pod on Off The Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the McCoy Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you, and we're going to bring you another bumper episode today as we look ahead to the start of the WSL season this weekend. Joining me to look forward to that is, as always, Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron. Guys, it's great to be on the cusp of the league again. I don't know about you guys, but I very much enjoyed having, obviously, the league going on here. Premier League back again. Thought I was sick of football after the World Cup, but actually, no, I've got to the point where I'm like, give me my complete fill of it. So that's really exciting. But before we dive into that, because we're recording this on Monday evening and it's just broken in the last hour or so that Lionel Messi has retired from international football. And obviously on this podcast, we mainly talk about women's football, but it would seem remiss of us not to mention the fact that he has retired. Karen, one of the iconic players, I think we all kind of knew coming to the World Cup that that was possibly the last time we were going to see him on a major international stage. And I think the passing of his father as well, who was such an influence on his career in the last couple of weeks, probably put a stamp on now is the right time to end things. But what a player.
Well, look, I think he's the best, obviously, of our generation. I don't think we can do the whole comparison thing to other generations. But for me, definitely the player that you always enjoyed watching the most growing up. And yeah, it felt fitting that this was the way he went out of the World Cup. He got his fairy tale like in 2022. And I think the whole world kind of rejoiced that he got his hands on the World Cup, and you could see what it meant to him because the Argentinian international side weren't always on his side, but he worked through that. And then this year, he still lit up the tournament. You know, he was still that player that gave us so many moments of joy. And to me, that undoubtedly proved that he is the greatest that we've had the honour of seeing, really. Because he could still, you know, he could still be the standout player on that international stage. And stepping away before, you have kind of the rhetoric that goes around Ronaldo, how he should have hung up his boots ages ago. No one has really suggested that. Maybe apart from Kenny Cunningham at times, but no one really suggested that about Messi. And even throughout the tournament this year, he didn't. So now is the right time to go while he still showed his passion and love for the jersey and still was able to give us those magic moments.
Yeah, 100%. Really enjoyed watching him during the World Cup, especially with all the question marks that were around him competing going into it. And you can tell by his statement that, you know, it's a decision that's right for him, but one that still, it hurts. Because obviously, when you've given that much to your country and you become the iconic figure of your country, then it's always going to be a difficult one.
And he especially could easily have stepped away after the last World Cup, but he still felt like he had more to give to the jersey, and he's given so much back. He didn't need to go and put his body through playing in the heat and through the circumstances that he did 4 years after he lifted the trophy, but he did it because he is that talisman. And you see the way the players around him react, like he's the whole man, like he really is. And that, I think, is probably testament to how he fits in when he goes into the national team as well, that he doesn't, he obviously has an aura, but it's one that's accessible to his teammates, and he's brought so many along. So he's the best ever.
And it is interesting that this isn't the first time he's retired. Like, he first retired in 2016 after a Copa final where he missed a penalty, came back in 2018, and then kept going for, what's that, another 8 years? You know, it's incredible.
He was good at this World Cup. I don't think he has another 8 years.
I don't think so.
You don't want to tarnish any of the memories that that you have.
No, definitely not. And I think he said before that he actually did write the statement like 2 days after the World Cup final, but then just took some time. And then with the passing of his dad, he decided that now was the right time to step away. So, yeah. An icon, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of reminiscing over the next week. We're going to have some week for a great montage between Katie Taylor and Lionel Messi. It's going to be a lot of fun.
We've already started them with Katie Taylor, that most recent one with Barry Keoghan. That hits you in the feels, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. And very excited to see what is to come for her. And of course, she does have her links back to Irish football. She had to make the decision. And P-Mount, of course. P-Mount. Of course. Do you even... I assume you weren't around.
I wasn't blessed, to be honest. No, I wasn't. But look, I'm still going to claim it.
Oh, of course. You captained the side that Katie Taylor played for. I mean...
There's a connection.
That's all you need to tell people. You don't need to go into the details. And then if they ask, why weren't you around? You're just like, oh, I'm just so youthful still. okay. Well, yes, there's a lot of exciting things happening this week, but we are obviously going to focus on the WSL and a little bit of the WSL2 as well, just because there's so many Irish competing. So we're going to take a quick break and then we will get straight into it. So the WSL kicks off this Friday, September 4th, with London City Lionesses facing off against Manchester United. Then on Saturday, we have Chelsea facing Aston Villa. And the majority of the games coming on Sunday, Brighton and Hove versus Arsenal, Spurs and West Ham. And we have Crystal Palace and Everton, Charlton versus Liverpool, and Manchester City versus Birmingham City. So what we're going to do, rather than diving into individual games, because everyone's had the summer off, we may not have exactly caught up yet on all the transfers that have happened. It has been a busy summer of football. We're going to do some predictions. We're going to look at some random talking points. We're going to pick some random clubs to dive into that have had particularly interesting summers. And hopefully, by the end of this recording, you will have a good understanding of what is to come in the WSL, and all our predictions will be entirely correct. And we will be looking back on this time in several months being like, God, aren't we great analysts? Scarlett, first off, how are you feeling going into the start of the league?
Yeah, I think it's very exciting. There's been a lot of change, obviously, with three teams going up. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how they all get on. So I think that's always a bonus to have new teams in the league. It'd be interesting to see how Charlton do. I think we probably would have expected a bit more investment from them. And then you look at Birmingham and Crystal Palace, who I think have pretty stronger squads all round. So I think it'll be really intriguing to see how those three teams get on. And then as well, we're going to have another great title race. I think obviously Arsenal have recruited really well, as well as Chelsea has, with obviously Katie McCabe coming in, and then Man City coming on to the season as champions. So there's going to be, I think, a lot of discussion points throughout the season. I'm hoping that, I think we got to a stage last year where it was kind of like the title was done. It was kind of just focusing on the relegation sort of battle. And then like that mid-table, we were like, who's going to get fifth? Who's going to get that fourth place? So hopefully this season will bring it back down to the wire a bit more. And I think there will be a lot more discussion points come the tail end of the season, just because I do think it's going to be more and more competitive this year than it ever has been before.
Yeah, I think that's the big hope that everyone had with the expansion, that not only would it be more competitive towards the bottom of the table, which, to be fair, even we say last season, for the last couple of seasons has been the one that we've been watching a little bit more, just because the top of the table has been pretty sewn up pretty quickly. Obviously a bit more interesting last season because it wasn't Chelsea, but City still had a fairly tight grasp on things. Let's start at the top of the table and we can work our way down. So title winners for this year and top three. I'm personally saying that it's not going to be a different top three to the top three that we have seen for I don't know how many countless years now.
I think there'll be consensus on this prediction.
Yeah. Okay. So Scarlett, you say the same. Top three, some combination of City, Chelsea, Arsenal. Oh, she has a little smile on her face.
I had a really rogue shout down for this, and it's kind of like a bold prediction. I suppose we'll get to that as well, but I think that Spurs are in with the shout of pushing to get into the top three. And
interesting.
I don't know. I think we might see Arsenal slip down the table this year. That is my bold prediction for the podcast. But
love this. We're not even 10 minutes in yet.
I know. They'll prove me wrong. Arsenal go and win the league now. But I think just what Martin Ho started to build at Spurs last season, obviously they've lost Bethany England, but I think they've recruited quite well. And I just think the football that we have seen them play, I think that he is building a new brand of football there. He's getting in the players that he wants, and he's sort of, I suppose he's diluted the team in areas that he didn't like. So I'm excited to see him and his new team, you know, flourish this season. So I don't know. It's a bold prediction, but I got a really good energy off him last season, and I like him as a manager. So I'm excited to see what they can do this year. Obviously, they don't have like the top class personnel that an Arsenal would have, but I don't know. Stranger things have happened, so.
Just for like context of last season, so Spurs finished in fifth on 36 points. Chelsea, who were in third, were 49. Then Arsenal, 51. City, 55. So that's like, it's a good 13-point gap there that they have to try and close. And I know, Karen, we've talked about Spurs so many times over the years, and there's always a point in the season where you think, do you know what? They've turned a corner here. They're going to do something really exciting. They've signed well. I think, like, you're right there, Scarlett, Martin Ho got a lot of praise last year for how he had switched up that Spurs team and definitely did seem to bring a lot of energy to them. But at the same time, there was still that little wobbly moments that we're so accustomed to seeing the Spurs team have.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's
definitely where you're coming from.
Yeah,
I think Arsenal have recruited really well as well. I think under the radar signing for me, obviously, because Stanway would have gotten headlines, and Battier coming back in, obviously a huge one as well. But I think Rutler, when we saw her at the Euros, like, she's so energetic in that midfield, and it allows Kim Little to play the games that they need her in, I think, as well, having those reinforcements in midfield. I think they possibly should have signed another centre-back just as cover, and that could be a downfall. That's why I wouldn't put Arsenal as winners again, but I find it really hard to see them slipping out of the top three.
Why do you think they might slip, Scarlett?
I'm not really sure. I think there was a sour taste left last season just with how the season did end. And I'd say there would have been a lot of disappointment in that dressing room, and then obviously a lot of disappointing departures for the fans. And I don't know, I feel like the tide might be shifting there a wee bit. They've obviously had a great year the year before with winning the Champions League, and I think last year obviously underperformed. And I just feel like that underperformance might take a toll into this season. I think they've lost a lot of big personalities and a lot of leaders in that squad this season. And obviously they've brought in, as Karen mentioned, some great names in to replace them. But I feel like it'll take a while for that to gel as well. So I don't necessarily think that bringing in the likes of a Georgia Stanway can instantly replace something that they already had. I could be a million miles off, but it's more of a hunch for the season than anything. But I feel like the way that last season ended on a bit of a lull, it might carry into this season. I just felt like the environment had shifted a little bit at the end of it. Obviously, I'm no inside information to this, but that was just the feeling I got from an outsider looking in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there was a staleness about them at the end of the season, and I don't feel excited for their chances to win anything. Like I say, I don't think that they've done enough to kind of, they let the players that they let go bridge that kind of excitement level with, you know, the stalwarts that they've let go. But I just because of the patterns that we've seen in the last few years, I'd love for someone to break into the top three, someone different, like you say, a Spurs or someone like that, or even a London City. I think they're probably most likely with Brighton as the dark horses. But I hope your prediction is right, to be honest. Not for you, Kathleen, obviously, but for the greater good of the league.
A single ball hasn't been kicked, and I already feel brilliant. This is Arsenal's year, guys. Going to do the double across the men's and the women's. I feel like I need to go lie on a wood floor after saying that. Well, I think they probably have had the biggest turnover, both in outgoing and incoming, in that I know Chelsea have had a lot of outgoing, but 11 players have left Arsenal over the course of the summer and they've brought in seven. And I think like seven or eight have left Chelsea and then they've brought in a similar-ish enough amount. So there is definitely a difference in the way that team has been made up. But I do think they've brought in, I wouldn't say necessarily a lot of straight swaps, but it's been quite obvious the players that they've brought in. There has been a mixture of that experienced talent like your Stanways, your Bagiers, but also a younger cohort of players as well, which I'm kind of excited to see how they fit into the squad. I still, like, biases aside, I don't think they're going to win the league. I don't think they're going to win the Champions League. Maybe do a run in the FA Cup or the League Cup. For me, it's still between City or Chelsea to do the win. I'm leaning towards City, but that is probably just the Bunny Shaw effect to a certain extent. But I do think Chelsea have signed very, very smart this summer, and it looks way more like a Sonia Bonpaster team than maybe ones that we've seen in the past. And she's got rid of a lot of, you know, the old Emma Hayes guard, which, not to say that they, you know, I don't think they were necessarily dragging the team down or anything. It was just a different team from a different era and one that she wanted to develop. So yeah, that would be my current prediction. I'm not going too wild. I could see a London City Lionesses getting close, but I don't think they're going to crack the top three this season.
No, they're too unpredictable to make that call right away. We have to see what they're like because we don't have a clue. Let's be realistic. We don't have a clue what they're going to be like.
Well, I've watched some of their preseason games and they're equally as chaotic as they were last year. So it'll be interesting to see when, and I know it's really hard to judge preseason because a lot of the times, you know, there's no rules on subs or how many you can make and the times are different. Like Arsenal played Everton in a behind closed doors preseason game yesterday and it was 6-1 to Arsenal and they played 3 45-minute halves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can be hard to judge these things, but yeah. The chaos element is definitely still there.
I want to get excited about Chelsea going into this year and stuff like that, but we haven't seen enough of their preseason. You know, they played against opposition that are well below the opposition that maybe Man City played in their lead in. Like they played the likes of, you know, Barcelona, and you know, there was just bigger matches that they played, so their record in preseason wasn't the best. Only worry I have for Man City is they seem to have a few injuries at the start of the season. I think if they give any bit of wiggle room or leg room to Chelsea to get any kind of start on them at the beginning of the season to open up any kind of gap, we've seen how Chelsea are so good at managing that in previous years. They're the best at managing the pressure of being top of the table. I know there's been like last season wasn't successful in their eyes, but I think last season was their kind of changing of the guard to bring it into the Bonpaster, kind of fully Bonpaster era. I think, like you say, I think Arsenal have to go through at least a season of that as well.
Yeah, you mentioned there the City injuries. So they played a friendly against United, which they won, I believe, over the weekend.
They did because Man United have not won any of their preseason games.
And they were missing Charles, Rose, Clinton and Miedema. And Miedema was also seen on crutches. So likelihood is that at least those four aren't going to be available for this weekend and probably more to come on how serious those injuries are. You would imagine if Miedema is on crutches, that's probably going to be a longer term one. The Neve Charles one, I think, has been known for a couple of weeks now. So to be determined how much of an effect that's going to have on them. But as you say, like that start of the season does matter so much. So like if you look at the likes of Arsenal, it was the draws at the start of the season that absolutely destroyed their chances of going for the league title. And even as slow a start of that, like I think they had four draws in their opening nine matches. that already set them on the back foot. And then there was a couple of other draws later on in the season and again set them on the back foot. And now this may change because the league has expanded a little bit. So there's
that's
a little
what we're hoping
bit.
For, isn't it? That
yeah.
The league isn't a foregone conclusion after three or four games, like a block of three or four games where the top teams play each other and that's it, you know, like a longer season, more chances for slip-ups here and there and surprises. And I think the league does need that. I don't know if it's happening a bit quickly, but it's something needed to give, I think.
So if you were to do your top three in order, Karen, what are you going for?
Chelsea, City, Arsenal.
Okay. And Scarlett, what, I know you're putting Spurs up there, but what's your 1, 2, 3?
I'm like yous, like torn between Chelsea and Man City. I do think Chelsea might edge it. I think Bombasser's had enough time now to sort of get her plans across and to sort of set her style and play in motion. So I'm going to go Chelsea, City, Tottenham.
Okay.
Might regret you on that.
It'll give us great fodder for the podcast. If you're right or if you're wrong.
If you're right, it'll be incredible.
Yeah. It'll be brilliant, yeah.
We will get you a special prize if you're right.
Right.
If you're, to be honest, if you're
yeah, because honestly, our prize should just be a little fence because we're just sitting on a show over here.
Okay, I'm gonna go City, Chelsea, Arsenal, just to keep it a little bit different, so that we have, as I said, something to talk about as the season goes on. Okay, I think I pretty much know the answer to this, but we might do some honorable mentions as well because there are some out there. But top goal scorer for the season, Scarlett,
Bunny Shaw. No, there's no need to explain it.
Yeah, Bunny Shaw.
Yeah, okay. I think, yeah, I would be surprised if anyone felt differently, although there was like moments last season where players went close. So if you were to think of people who might challenge her for that, like, say anything could happen, you know, she could get an injury and be out for however long. Now obviously we hope that doesn't happen because she's brilliant to watch, but who are your other contenders?
Well, I would never have made this prediction while she was at United. Potentially Mallard if she gets a lot of game time, and because I think they'll create so many chances. I'm kind of between putting Lauren James in that bracket because I know she'll score loads, but just last year we didn't get to see her enough. Maybe Mallard. Like, she was up there at the start of the season when she was firing with United. Obviously they had a dip as a whole. The only thing is she was consistently playing like for United as a starter, as their main attacking threat. So I think there'll be a lot more changes in City or in Chelsea that might hamper her chances. And I think that's the way it is with a lot of the teams, like with Arsenal, Russo, sometimes she's deployed in a deeper role. Obviously, Miedema's not there to make kind of too many changes to City. So I think while Bunny Shaw is available, she'll always be that out-and-out striker. So it's hard to see anyone competing with her, but potentially Mallard.
Mm-hmm. Scarlett, any shouts from you?
Well, I think Russo's another one that's just kind of obvious. She'll be standing close behind Bunny Shaw, I'm sure. Yeah. And then, I mean, if Spurs are going to finish third, then I might have to go with Kirsty Hansen, who obviously they've brought in. So could be another. She obviously had a bit of a breakthrough season last year. Not a breakthrough season, but probably her most impressive season to date. So
scored 43% of her side's goals.
Yeah, very impressive. They'll need her to do that, though. That's why they signed her, you know, for that consistency.
43% is an insane stat, isn't it? So hopefully,
I won't lie, they didn't have a lot of goals.
No, yeah, there wasn't much competition. Like,
no, but just what I was researching yesterday.
We love a stat.
We love a stat. It sounds great for her, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But if she can do the same again this year and maybe double Tottenham's tally, that would be fantastic. So, I'll go for that. And then I suppose, like, Puteas is another name that's come in. Like, she's obviously, it's not her main game is scoring goals, but she has scored maybe, I think she scored 8 goals in the Champions League alone last year. So, and that's only in the space of maybe 10, 11, 12 games. So she will bring that firepower as well to London City, and we'll probably get the likes of Freya Godfrey more goals as well, or Isabel Goodwin. So, I mean, if they're going to improve on last year again, then they're probably three of the names to look out for too.
Yeah. Well, the top three from last year was obviously Bunny Shaw, 21 goals and 118 attempts as well. Alessia Russo, she had 13 goals. She also got 6 assists. And then Christy Hansen, who we have mentioned, with 12 goals. So, yeah. Christy Hansen, I think she's almost like, you know, that player that is in like a small team in the World Cup that goes an impressive distance because they have one really, really good player and somehow makes the race for the golden boot, and you're almost willing the top stars not to score in the latter stages so that they hold on to it. That's how I felt about Christy Hansen last season, just because she really did single-handedly haul Villa up the table a little bit. Okay, so then the signing who's going to make the biggest impact?
Puteas will be the most spoken about. So in terms of impact, if we're talking attention, like that it's going to bring to the team, that's going to be it. On the pitch, I actually think they really needed reinforcements at the back. So for London City, I think they're all London City for me. So London City, if they get it right, the Mary Earps, Mappy Leon at the back to solidify that, that could be the most important signing for them, but impact wise and everything that goes with this, it's Puteas.
For you, Scarlett?
Yeah, I think all the London City ones are
like definitely
very standout.
Eyes on them.
Yeah, it's gonna, you know, Puteas is bums on seats, you know, it's a massive rise in attendance, I'd say, and probably just to have the experience of the players you mentioned there, Karen, in the change room would be massive. To bring players who have won Champions Leagues, World Cups, it's just, you know, that's, I don't think enough will be said for what that will do in that changing room and change the mindset of probably the players who had a bit of a up and down season last year and obviously change of manager. So, Karen, like, I'd agree. I'm really excited to see how Emily Murphy can do at Brighton as well. Obviously, they've had they're going to have a change of manager now that Vidicic is gone, which is probably came as quite a shock to everyone. But yeah, I think the London City ones are going to be the main attraction to the league this year and will probably make the most difference. And then I have to say Kirsty Hansen, because I've already predicted her to possibly challenge for Golden Boot and for Tottenham to finish third. So I'm going to have to stick with it now. I've committed. I'm going to have to keep committing.
Scarlett is an official Spurs and Kirsty Hansen fan for the rest of the season.
I know. It's not a good idea. I've already regretted my decision. Hopefully they're not only like the men's team.
Yeah, if only you hadn't said it in such a public forum, you know.
I know. It's out there.
Yeah, so I agree. I had the LCL additions as well, just because I do think there's going to be a lot of eyes on them. But one other player who I had, who I think I'm more just interested to see a little bit more of, is Yulia Dragoni, who has come into the Chelsea side, because if you listen to any of the commentary around her, it's very much that she has the potential to be the best player in the world, if not one of the best players in the world. And I'm curious to see how that unfolds in a Chelsea dressing room where there are already so many big name players. It's a very different league set up to what she's used to. So,
but what a confidence boost for a 19-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And I think,
to be fair to, like, say Bene that went to City, like, she was managed quite well. She and seemed to find her feet fairly quickly. She has that experience under her belt, so it might be a case of just getting some minutes in League Cups and stuff. It could be a long-term plan with her, but you're right, the narrative around her is pretty exciting, especially for an Italian. We don't kind of see a huge influx of Italians into the league, or we don't have any kind of blueprint for how they've gotten on in the WSL. So she kind of will be breaking the mold, I guess, for a young Italian coming through.
Well, that was also part of the reason why I put her into potential impact. I was thinking, like, not just on the league, but just on our general awareness of, you know, Italian football. And I think Italy, obviously, on the men's side, has such an illustrious history when it comes to football. Like, we all know the icons that have come out of there, although they have obviously struggled with major tournaments over the last while. And they've tried to inject some of that into the women's side, and they've tried to inject the money, but like, they haven't been professional for that long. They're still trying to kind of develop those big names. I think historically they have their big names, but there was that lull in football as many countries experienced, and they're still building their way back up. So that's just why I thought it's exciting to see a young player come from there that has that much hype around her. Yeah. Okay, I think Scarlett has kind of already answered this one in terms of her answer, but surprise package for the year. I don't know if you have another one, but I assume Spurs kind of falls into that.
Yeah, I think they do. But I also think Crystal Palace will survive this season. I know obviously they probably were disappointed with their season 2 seasons ago when they went straight back down, but I think they've a much stronger squad than they did this time 2 years ago. And I think that they'll be a team that will probably still be down the bottom half of the table, but I think they'll have enough and will probably not overachieve, but they'll exceed their expectations, I'd say, for the season.
Okay. Karen.
I find it hard to find a surprise because I'm on that fence. I don't think West Ham will be pulled into the relegation battle that they were in before. Okay. I've made 7 signings or more. So again, it's kind of an unknown with them. And they shouldn't be where they are, you know, a club of that stature, obviously a lot to do with how it's backed, but I think they have a very honest manager based on some of her post-match interviews, so maybe a bit more time with her and a better understanding with the squad will give them a bit of a boost, and I am hoping that they're not in that relegation battle.
Very good. Mine is almost a little bit of wishful thinking. I'm kind of going along Scarlett's Spurs idea, but mine is Charlton, and that they actually will be able to do something in the league based off not their scoring ability, but their defense. So they went 27 games unbeaten and had the best defense in the WSL2 last year. Karen Hill, who is their manager, brought Spurs up into the WSL in 2019. In 2021, when she was first appointed manager, she said within 5 years she wanted to get the club to the WSL, and she's done exactly that. Now, I don't know, have they signed enough? I think getting the likes of Ashley Neville and Emily Van Egmonden is good in terms of experienced players from the WSL, and their goal scoring would worry me, but I think they could do something interesting. I think it could be a bit like when we saw some of the other teams come up in recent years and they actually put in really, really good performances. They just maybe didn't have that firepower. But
I don't think those bottom teams, I think you're right. I think it is more about defense and having just staying in games and picking up those kind of draws against the mid tables doesn't make for the most exciting. But if you have someone who can go on the counter, if your set pieces are good, so hopefully they can carry that record through, because obviously we've got a bit of Irish interest there as well. Sophie Whitehouse and Lucia Lobato. It's good, mm-hmm. again, to have just that keen interest in a team in the WSL with some Irish contingents. And especially, obviously, Sophie Whitehouse is probably the least spoken about of the three international keepers. But, you know, she stood up for them last season, and obviously in that penalty shootout, she saved them all. So
her and Katie Keane were exceptional throughout playoff match.
Yeah, so it'll be great to get to see more of her, because obviously we haven't done the international stage yet.
Yeah, she doesn't have any caps, does she?
I don't think she has any caps yet.
No. I'm trying to think of, did I see her in a behind closed doors game or something before? But I don't think I have. Yeah, but definitely.
She has one appearance, so she must have played one game, but obviously, yeah. we want to see our girls, you know, the ones who haven't come through the National League here, who we aren't as familiar with.
Well, yeah, and as well, because it was whenever Courtney couldn't play a while ago, there was that kind of question mark of, oh, okay, we're so used to having her there. We have these two other goalkeepers. Obviously, Katie Keane as well has been in and out a little bit on kind of more extended squads. Mm-hmm. But even we were all asking who is actually the right person to go in there, and Grace has had the more experience, so she was the one chosen to deputise. But, you know, if everyone's getting a bit more of a chance to see Sophie Whitehouse, and I have touch wood that Courtney stays fit and can remain mm-hmm. number one because she's exceptional. But even if there's a friendly or something, because realistically we need to get minutes into everyone if we want to go to a World Cup next year to cover ourselves for every eventuality. So definitely going to be exciting to see what she can do. Okay, first manager out. I have two for this.
I don't like this question.
I know. We shouldn't be. We don't. Okay. So my reasoning is, I'll say mine first. I'll take the hit first. Okay. I have London City Lionesses down there just because
I was thinking of this.
They did last summer, or not last summer, sorry, last season. And it was just a bit chaotic. Like, there was not really any reason to get rid of the manager, and they just went for it. And I don't think we saw any major sort of uptick in form or anything once they were gone. So I have them down. And then my other one is Gareth Taylor and Liverpool, just because of last season. And I don't think, not necessarily saying this is his fault, but I just don't think that their summer transfer has gone particularly well. I think their squad is still quite thin. I think it could be a struggle for them again. And he's probably on the line a little bit more.
I would agree with that, but I don't think it's a manager on the chopping block. I think it could be him saying, I haven't got the backing I need to make a difference. So I don't think it will be a firing. I think it would be a stepping away as opposed to a firing. And it to be, not to be like down and dumps about it, I don't think that some of the teams would care enough if they were safe to go changing a manager mid-season, like a United or a Liverpool. I think it's easier to just be kind of plateau and get through a season, rather than, that's the reason why London City could easily change manager, because you know that there's a lot, there's sole focus on them, you know, as a club. The women's team is the sole focus. So that's the reason why that could happen. But in terms of the other ones, I think it would be a stepping away. Mm. And like Scarlett said last week, I think with Man United and Eva Holland, I think, like you say, it's probably a project. And again, it'll be up to her to make the most of the kind of squad that she has. They'll just kind of have to back her. I'd be surprised if, even if she didn't thrive this year, they can use the whole rhetoric of, oh, it's a project.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting asking that question, because it was our producer Emma who put it in when we were coming up with what our predictions and talking points would be for this week's episode. And she had to very clearly say when the season begins, because we have had two managers depart in Brighton within just like literally just over a week before the league started. And then Mark Skinner, not that far back either, and Eva Olid coming in. So Dario Vidosic, as we have mentioned earlier, he left, and he is rumoured to be taking on the top job at Angel City in the NWSL. He's obviously very, very well respected within Brighton, as was his father, who very sadly passed away during last season. Arturo Ruiz is coming in for him, who's coming in from Real Sociedad, which is an interesting one because obviously they were playing Chelsea last week in the Champions League qualifying time. So he's been giving a 3-year deal. He led Real Sociedad third in Liga F last season and the qualifying rounds of the Champions League, which is where for the first leg, they lost 5-2 to Chelsea. And Vidosic obviously had a very like you would say, quite successful last season, maybe not in the league necessarily in what we have expected from Brighton, but they did get to the FA Cup final in Wembley. And then we had Eva Olid coming in from Mark Skinner. She got a 2-year contract with an option of another year. She brought Hearts to their first Scottish Women's Premier League title. Sorry, Scarlett. She spent 5 years there. And like United have explicitly said, I've read this in multiple pages, The Athletic have some really good reporting on it, that they are 100% prioritizing developing homegrown players rather than spending large transfer fees. So two very interesting moves there.
It's the exact opposite of London City. And if it's true and it's not just escape, like getting around not spending money, which based on every kind of evidence we've been given is the case, and it would be brilliant to see that, and it would be very beneficial for the England national team, potentially Scotland, Wales, Ireland as well, if that was the case. But I colour me sceptical.
Well, see, I also just don't think, I think it's a great thing to have as a pillar of your strategy, obviously. Yeah. But it's not a strategy. Like it's not something that's going to get you Champions League spots. It's not something that's going to get you a title. You might get lucky and go on a cup run or something.
So how long is the strategy is the question.
Yeah, exactly. Like if United suddenly drop down the table and London City Lionesses suddenly go up the table. Now, I don't think that's necessarily an advocacy for either one, because I think clubs like LCL should, as well as bringing in those players, should also be looking at, you know, homegrown talent or younger players, and, you know, not just buying players who are maybe in the latter stages of their career and have proven that they've done it all. But it just is an interesting comparison, because they probably are two teams that people would consider or hope to be in and around the same level this season and competing for, you know, I would say anywhere between third to sixth, maybe.
Yeah.
Did you read 100% committed? Was that the line?
I think it was completely prioritizing the development. Right. Okay. I think that was it.
That's, yeah, it's, I mean, it's good for, I suppose, a long-term project, but it to completely prioritize it does scream an excuse of just lack of funding, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely, the line was definitely rather than spending large transfer fees.
Yeah, okay.
Look, that just shows where United are at, and that's why they haven't come into the conversation as competing for Europe or anything like that. And it would be great if they become that kind of team that really does champion it and keeps kind of the, I guess, the DNA of women's football alive, like country-wise, because it is going a little bit in the way of the men's, which, good, bad, there's bigger debate there. But obviously, for people in the area, you'd be hopeful for it, but in terms of competing, but they obviously have the right kind of manager in place who can do that, because she's obviously done it with Hearts with a lot of homegrown talent or relative unknowns, has brought them together and brought them through over a long period. So again, it's just how long is the strategy and how long are they willing to give the manager to implement something like that, because if it's that kind of strategy, then that's a whole club thing. And how do all those underage setups and B teams, how do they all work together?
I think it took Olid like 5 years to get there with Hearts.
Exactly. So she's been given a 2-year contract with the year add-on. The two statements and the actions don't really line up.
No.
It's also like two very different leagues, obviously, as well. Like the standard is, it's a massive step
significantly
up. So as I said last week, like I think she could succeed, but it will take 2-3 years, you know, so I don't think it's a case that there can be any excuse for Manchester United, for the board, if they turn around and are disappointed with a bad season this year. I don't think there's, you know, that's expected. It will take time for them. I think it can work under Olid, but It definitely won't be this year, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just how long then can she keep a Toon, a Letizia, a Park, if they're not competing for anything? Mm. Because as we know, in the Women's League, weirdly, teams don't seem to mind selling to each other at the top of the table. So it'd be very hard to hold on to players like that, because, you know, there will be interest from those top, the teams above them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it is also interesting in the context of, like, one of the most controversial changes, I suppose, that has happened over the summer, is that they're allowing WSL Academy teams to enter into the third tier of English football, which a lot of people are very unhappy about. Now, you do get it in other leagues. I'm pretty sure Barca have a B team that competes, although I think they had to take some of their players out of it because they were getting very close to competing in the full Liga F. But, you know, a lot of people are just unhappy because they think it's an opportunity for clubs with massive resources to have multiple teams competing on multiple fronts and maybe not given the opportunity to other sides that only have the one senior squad, you know, beyond, like, say, underage or whatever.
Well, there's that argument, but then there's other teams who are coming into the league who have to say, no, we don't want to come in. We don't have the resources to come in and compete at that level. So again, it's finding a balance between that. Is it nearly better to have a team that actually is able to resource a team to compete in the league rather than putting someone under a huge amount of pressure who can't financially sustain it? And you just have to acknowledge that you are a feeder team.
Yeah.
What happens if they get promoted then?
I haven't looked at, I think they can compete in basically the leagues that aren't, that the senior squad isn't in.
Okay.
So, like, you wouldn't be able to go all the way to the WSL, but, like, you
hypothetically, though, we could have, like, Man City B in the Championship in a few years' time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chelsea. I think, like, there was similar talk when the National League was announced at home, where it was the likes of Shamrock Rovers wanted to put a Shamrock Rovers B team into the third tier, essentially, of Irish football. And I think there was a lot of people that were, I suppose, not very happy with that. And it, like, it is the case that if Miedema was coming back from injury, is she allowed to step down and play in the third tier to get minutes back under her belt before she plays for the Man City, like, first team again? Is that something that would be allowed, or is it like a set? You know, there is all those questions as well of it being utilised for other reasons other than, you know, actually trying to put a team forward to.
I suppose, no, you'd have to not allow that. You'd imagine you'd have to have your set team.
Yeah. Because I'm just reading here. They're not eligible for promotion. So there's four teams that are going to go in 27, 28. So next season. And they were chosen against criteria to be developed in the coming months. And because the way the third tier is done in England, it's split over north, south. Yeah. So there'll be two teams in each. And it came off
that's okay, because if they are that good, it's going to be more of your youth team that you are developing, hopefully some of the younger players. And it if they are that good, it'll bring the standard of that league up while still allowing everyone to compete. And they'll say, oh, that's the level we need to be at if we want to.
Yeah.
They're the type of players we want to be developing. Then they get promoted. Those underage players have gotten exposure. And again, the transfer market goes.
Yeah, it came off the back of data showing that young English players were getting significantly fewer competitive minutes than their counterparts across Europe's leading leagues. That's probably because the WSL attracts so many players from so many different countries in a very different way. Okay, we're quickly running out of time because this is just so much to talk about and it's very, very fun. But one final one that we'll look at is Irish player who's going to make the biggest impact, and we'll include WSL2 in this because if we were to limit it to the WSL, well, there is still a few, but we obviously have a lot more between the two. Or if you want, you can choose one from each league. I will not be picky.
Okay. Well, I think my standout answer is Jesu with Leicester. I really think this could be a really exciting opportunity for her. We spoke about it last week already. I don't want to touch on it too much. Just the bits we've seen of her against Netherlands were just so, so exciting. And just to see her in an environment where she can thrive and become the best version of herself as a player at Leicester, I think will be really, really exciting to see. So I think she's my obvious answer if she can obviously stay fit, which we're all hoping for. And hopefully she can make the impact that we all believe she can make.
Great answer. I had Emily Murphy. If she can get into that Brighton squad nice and early, continue the form that we've seen her with Ireland, continue growing that confidence that she really seemed to bed in Newcastle. And hopefully, you know, now that she's down in a place where she said for a while that she's wanted to be, she'll be happier, fitter, playing at that bit of a higher level, and also within a team that's very well established at bringing through young players. And I think she could be the sort of player that Brighton have really missed in previous seasons. Now, obviously, there has been a lot of change in the last week there, so that's not exactly ideal, but I do agree with you, Scarlett, with Jessie as well. If she can stay fit, I'm really, really excited, as I always am, to see what she can do.
Yeah, in terms of transfers, they're definitely the standout ones. It'd be obviously interesting also to see how Leanne Kiernan gets on and if she can stay injury-free, see if she can make an impact. But I do still think that those two will be the ones that we'll be speaking mostly about. And
well, realistically, we'll probably be speaking most about Katie McCabe and Courtney Gosling, like, but we had to like come up with something a little bit different.
But to be fair, they're nearly getting as much airtime from us as Katie these days, because they have been, like, we're obviously so excited about Jess, and Emily's been standout in the international scene. Apart from that, obviously it'd be interesting to see how Watford get on. Avian Clancy is obviously there. Saoirse Noonan is there. We know Rusha was, I think, in training with her. So I think she said herself on her Instagram that the clock was ticking for her. So
yeah, she did an interview with Owen Shane on Off the Ball a couple of weeks ago, which you can get the podcast for, where she talked about being in training with Watford and where she was at the moment.
Yeah, so we can't talk about her as a transfer. So we'll start that one until we know more next week. I think that we'll talk more about Risha when it comes to the announcement of the next international squad, obviously, because that'll be a talking piece. But for now, yeah, all eyes on Jess and Emily, I think.
Yeah. I mean, as we said last week, there's been so much movement that I think everyone's going to be really interested in across the board to see how they do. And it could very much be the case that someone that we haven't considered is going to come out and really make a case for themselves.
Maybe Brennan.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of names there. So obviously we chatted to Denise O'Sullivan last week. You can still catch that interview. She was absolutely brilliant on her time in Liverpool and what was actually going on in her head. Really open, really honest. One of those rare conversations that you get to have with the player, especially when they're still playing. But also there's a bit of crack thrown in there too. It wasn't all very, very serious stuff, and just talking about the season ahead. And then this week we also have interviews coming with Saoirse Noonan and Avian Clancy, both of who were really interesting on why they made their moves, what impact they think that they can make. And I think the very consistent string to every player that we've talked to so far is they're doing this for, you know, their love of the football, the club game, but Ireland is very much at the forefront of their minds as well. So some good discussions on that. But for now, I will leave you both there. Thank you very much. That was very enjoyable. We will be back next week with all the chatter over what happens in that opening weekend. Scarlett is hoping for a raging Spurs win to launch it all. who did I say? Oh yeah, West Ham. They have there's potential there, so long as they don't go the way of the men's team, you'll be fine.
Yeah,
equally entertaining though.
Equally entertaining. Very, very true. I'm sure you are breathing a sigh of relief over the weekend, Karen, after that United result. Bruno coming in clutch for you.
It was nervy for a little bit in that first half, but look.
Yeah,
We're back. Darroche
played very well for the first 60 minutes, you have to say. Okay, the Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.